The waves echo behind me. Patience, faith, openness is what the sea has to teach. Simplicity, solitude, intermittency. But there are other beaches to explore. There are more shells to find. This is only a beginning. Hi there, friends. Welcome to Literary Snapshots, episode 9, where we're going to discuss chapters 5 through 8 through the conclusion of Gift from the Sea by Anne Mora Lindberg. And I think you can agree that if you've been reading along, you probably have pages that are full of underlines and highlights, just like I showed in the introduction I did for you. So because there's so much good stuff, I want to just jump right in and get to it. Let's kick things off then with chapter 5, the oyster bed shell. And she uses this shell to represent the middle years of marriage. So after the double sunrise, the honeymoon period, if you like, there comes these middle years full of complications, raising children, no longer just this enclosed space in our marriages. And it's also a symbol of middle age to her and the beauty that can come from that when we allow it. So I love just how she picked the oyster bed, which is, you know, it's not beautiful to look at. It's not the normal shell you would pick up on the beach and think, ooh, this is a treasure. But it has its place in our lives, of course, and it's full of both function and beauty when we allow it. And I loved this quote that she shared in the middle of this chapter when she's referring to middle age. Perhaps middle age is, or should be, a period of shedding shells, the shell of ambition, the shell of material accumulations and possessions, the shell of the ego. Perhaps one can shed at this stage in life as one sheds in beach living. One's pride, one's false ambitions, one's mask, one's armor. Was that armor not put on to protect one from the competitive world? If one ceases to compete, does one need it? Perhaps one can at last in middle age, if not earlier, be completely oneself. And what a liberation that would be. I read that and think, yes, that is exactly what I want from this period in my life. There's so much freedom from saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. This is what I no longer want to do. And to be at peace with that or to find our way toward peace in that is so amazing. It's interesting for me personally, reading this when I was 43 earlier this year compared to the last time I read it when I was 37. And that's a really big difference in my life phase. Now I feel like I'm much closer to this period that she's talking about now than I was when I read this before, when I was just in the function of the oyster bed shell and not thinking about these things and not seeing this afternoon, as she calls it, opening up before me. And I think for me, writing Introverted Mom was such a huge part of taking off my mask and of saying, this is who I am. And then hearing from so many other women like you guys and others who've said, yes, that's what I needed to be able to own myself, not to, you know, never push ourselves out of our comfort zone, but to say, this is who I truly am and the way that God wired me to be in the world, to make a difference in the world, and to push ourselves out of that when needed. And so I long for this, what she's talking about, to be completely oneself. She goes on in the same passage to say, it is true that the adventures of youth are less open to us. Most of us cannot, at this point, start a new career or raise a new family. And this brings up a huge elephant in the room that I've been trying to decide whether or not to discuss with you guys. Part of me just doesn't want to because it feels like it doesn't fit. Then another part feels like it does fit. And whenever I hear someone talk about this book, I'm always waiting for them to address this. And I have never heard someone address it. So I'm going to give it a try. Because Anne had not only these wonderful milestones in her life as an aviator and all these different things, she also had tragedy, like the loss of their first child in a very traumatic way. And then something else, which this quote ties into, it was found that later, after Anne and Charles Lindbergh had both passed away, Charles Lindbergh died in 1976. She died in, it was in the early 2000s. So, I mean, she lived a long time after him. But after her death, it later came out that Charles Lindbergh actually had another family in Germany. He had several children that he had and raised from afar, but raised financially and visited regularly by a couple of different women. And this came out and was proven with DNA evidence afterwards. The rest of the Lindbergh children, so Anne and Charles's children, have met the German Lindbergh children. And I mean, okay, so how do we, you know, even begin to talk about this? Anne wrote Gift from the Sea in 1955. It's said that this started with Charles Lindbergh in 1957. So that was after this book came out. And so, oh my goodness, it just fills me with so many mixed emotions reading Anne's words and then thinking about this reality, whether she knew about it or didn't know, had no idea. We just don't know. But I think what it just goes to prove is the validity of what she is saying about relationships, that they are always based on change. And sometimes, especially in this middle phase of life, we long for a return to an earlier phase, thinking that that will make things better or make us happier or fulfill something that is lacking. When really, if we lean into the change the way that she's suggesting, I think that has to be the goal for all of us in our lives and our relationships with ourselves, with our spouses, and with our children. Okay, I am more than ready to leave that topic behind, but I hope that you don't mind me bringing it up and just addressing it so that we can put it out there. And remember, life is messy, right? All of our lives are messy and there's no picture perfect anything. But as we turn to chapter 6, the Argonauta, we are also reminded about the freedom that can come from midlife in our relationships. And I loved the symbol here that she uses. This quote especially stayed with me. "What a wonderful day," I think, turning it around in my hand to its starting point again. What has made it so perfect? Is there not some clue here in the pattern of this day? To begin with, it is a pattern of freedom. Its setting has not been cramped in space or time. An island, curiously enough, gives a limitless feeling of both. Nor has the day been limited in kinds of activity. It has a natural balance of physical, intellectual, and social life. It has an easy, unforced rhythm. And in this quote, she's referring to a day on the beach on her island when her sister had joined her for, I think, a week or a few days of her stay. And so she was noticing and documenting this day with her sister as an example for us as married individuals, the ideal partnership and the ideal type of rhythm for this period of our lives in this midlife freedom Argonauta phase. And what I wrote in the margin when I read this was two words: purposeful ease. It reminded me of a story that I heard not too long ago from a homeschooling mom who wrote me, and she was saying she had been homeschooling for decades and had graduated several children, so she was very experienced and had been around for a while. And she said that her mantra had always been, for their homeschool, purposeful ease. And that was the way that the purposeful part made it clear that they would get something done, accomplish something, but they would only do that with this easy rhythm, this unforced rhythm. And I I couldn't help but think of that when I read this story from Anne, thinking, yes, that is what I want. And when I heard this from this other homeschool mom, I wrote purposeful ease everywhere. I have it on my list, on my to-do lists. It's a reminder that that is exactly what I want to aim for too. And isn't that what we long for in our day-to-day lives? This just the rhythm, like the waves coming in from the sea, right? There's surprises there sometimes when you could have a big wave, a small wave. Sometimes it's nice and easy and even. Sometimes it's unpredictable, but there's still a rhythm there. And I think it's a beautiful image for us to hold on to as mothers and women. Later in chapter 7, A Few Shells, Anne goes on to discuss the way that the island she's on is naturally selective. It has natural limits. It's only so big. There's only so much you can do. And the flip side of that is that it is also, it's strange because it's small, and yet in some ways it's pushed her out of her comfort zone, because she's discussing about how her island has selected for her the people with which she will interact. And in some ways they're not the people that she would normally choose to interact with. And I loved this brilliant quote that she shares later on. She says, "We usually select the known, seldom the strange. We tend not to choose the unknown, which might be a shock or a disappointment or simply a little difficult to cope with. And yet it is the unknown with all its disappointments and surprises that is the most enriching." She's really talking here about friendships and relationships like that with acquaintances, but I couldn't help but think of this in terms of parenting. How true is it that we don't want the unknown? We want it to be predictable, and yet it isn't, right? Anyone who's been a mom for more than like a day or not even that has probably figured out that it is not predictable. It reminds me of how I often tell my kids when we're going through a challenge of some sort, either them personally or as a family or as a world, as we are right now in the midst of COVID-19, I compare our lives to the protagonists in a story. We never want to read a story where the person wakes up, they go about their day, nothing unexpected ever happens, and they go to bed and repeat for the end of the book. That would be so boring, right? No one would ever read that story. What makes a good story in the written word or in our lives are these unexpected challenges that we face. Then we learn how to overcome them. We become flexible and we find that outcomes are not what we expected, and yet there's beauty there. And that also mirrors that resolution in a story, right? When the character has stretched and it's been painful, maybe they've lost something precious, maybe they've been through a crisis, and yet there's this point of resolution where they figure out how they can continue on. And I mean, with few exceptions, there's usually also a lot of beauty there. And so life has stretched us. Life has broadened our limits in ways that we never would have chosen. Yet I can't help but think, when we look back 50 years from now, are those challenges and hardships the very things that we will somehow find a way to be grateful for, and the very things that will have defined our story of overcoming? I love thinking about that, and I really hope that that is true. Here's a quote that I just had to share from chapter 8, the final chapter called The Beach at My Back. And when I read this, thinking of how she's writing this in 1955, it's like, how much has changed, and yet how much has not changed? Listen in. "Modern communication loads us with more problems than the human frame can carry. It is good, I think, for our hearts, our minds, our imaginations to be stretched, but body, nerve, endurance, and lifespan are not as elastic. My life cannot implement in action the demands of all the people to whom my heart responds. I cannot marry all of them, or bear them all as children, or care for them all as I would my parents in illness or old age. Our grandmothers, and even with some scrambling, our mothers, lived in a circle small enough to let them implement in action most of the impulses of their hearts and minds. We were brought up in a tradition that has now become impossible, for we have extended our circle throughout space and time. And that right there, I mean, does that not sum up why 15 minutes spent on Facebook can make you want to pull the covers over your head for the rest of the day? Not only is it so much negative emotion necessarily, but even the genuine heartstring stories that draw to us and call to us as introverts or as highly sensitive people who are more in touch with that empathetic response in ourselves, it's just exhausting at a whole nother level. And when she talks about that, the idea of her grandmother actually being able to do something with those feelings, right? Because usually they would be towards just the person next door to you, and you could actually respond in a way that helped that person, compared to feeling our hearts pulled in all these different directions in a way that we can never keep up. And what's the answer? I think it's that we have to limit our amount of consuming, right? Because it becomes a consumptive process, consuming the news, consuming the needs, and know that it is actually a need that we're meant to meet in some way. I think it all comes down to accepting the limits of our life and even embracing those limits and then finding the freedom within them, the freedom within those boundaries. This is what Anne's Island did for her. It was naturally selective in the amount of people that came into her life, in the amount of activities. And of course, that wasn't a model she could sustain, but she used those limits to talk about accepting the natural limits of her life as a mom of five at that time. And I think we can do the same thing. And when we embrace those limits, as well as using them as a shield of sorts that allows us to say no to the things that fall outside those limits, then we just discover a greater freedom and a greater joy. She talks about this earlier when she says that, you know, 3 shells on your desk is lovely, but 30 would be a mess. And she says that it's only framed in space that beauty blooms. I love that. And you can visualize it so easily with that illustration. So that leads me to my ending question for all of us right now, which is, what shells do you need to shed right now in your life in order to frame in space and beauty the ones that remain? I hope that this discussion has been, you know, thoughtful and thought-provoking and that you've really enjoyed this book. And I wanted to give a little bit of a teaser for the mom book I've chosen for the summer, Forward Me, Back to You by Mitali Perkins. So I wanted to read the author's note from that for you now. Author's note. As readers and writers, we bring our whole selves, past, present, and future, to a novel. We also come with a history of relationships, both sweet and painful. As I crafted the story you're about to read, some things were tough to imagine for my characters, especially exploitation, abandonment, and assault, even though they happened in the past before the book begins. Imagining somebody else's suffering can bring up memories of our own, or sadness over wounds experienced by those we love. My hope is that trauma never gets the last word. Healing requires tenderness and sometimes even tears, as my main characters, Kat and Robin, both discover. I wrote this novel from my heart to yours with the prayer that we all receive the grace we need to move forward. I found that the first time I read that author's note, I was almost in tears by the end of it. And it just shows what's so special about this book. I really think if you have the opportunity to dig into it with us this summer as moms and discuss it in the forum, it will be a real blessing. And again, as I mentioned before, it's a great book to invite your teenagers, if you have any, to read with you as well. Until next time, friends, take good care, and I can't wait to chat about all things book-related and mom-related and introvert-related in the forum with you really soon. Bye-bye.